Welcome to folks watching on the live stream at OccupyDC.org. I'm Pete Tucker. I report locally at TheFightBack.org, and I'm joined by Burke Stansberry, who has a number of different hats, including with the Resource Generation. He recently wrote a message, and it went viral on Facebook. It was on MSNBC.com. Locally, did an interview at WPFW. Welcome, Burke.
Hey, how's it going, Pete?
Good. Here. Maybe you could read the message that you wrote and talk about why you wrote it. And I guess we should say it was in the theme of we are the 99%, but also that some of the 1%ers may stand with everybody else. And that message being the theme here at Occupy DC at McPherson Square as well, where we are.
Yeah, so, like you said, you know, there's been this website, this blog, We Are the 99%, that has, you know, a lot of people have posted really amazing stories on there telling about joblessness and struggling to find work and find a place to live and just make it in the world. And so some of us who happen to be, part of the 1%, as it were, or part of the small percentage of people in this country that have actually benefited from the policies that the banks and our government have put into place, we decided to set up a sort of mirror site that is called We Stand with the 99%. So you can go to it. It's a Tumblr site. It's westandwiththe99%.tumblr.com. So it was actually someone else's sign who they were holding up in one of the Occupy Wall Street protests that kind of went viral, and then a bunch of us posted our versions of that. But I'll go ahead and read my 1% sign, and then, you know, we can talk a little bit more about it. So I wrote, I inherited more than $1 million when I turned 25. I've given some of that money away, but I'm still the 1%. My 2-year-old son has a disability and many complicated health issues. I can't imagine how much more difficult our life would be if I weren't wealthy. People like me should be taxed more. People like my son should have guaranteed health care. I will fight for wealth distribution and universal health care. I am the 1%. I stand with the 99%. So that's what I wrote and posted on the site, and it ended up getting picked up, and I was interviewed by some other news media, including MSNBC, and I think people have been interested in this side of the story, that there are actually wealthy people and people who've benefited from the system, you know, many of us through pure luck, through inheritance in my case, who actually see the faults in the system and want to change it, and therefore we're standing with the 99%.
Talk about the Resource Generation.
So Resource Generation is an organization for young people with wealth who are committed to social change, and we're trying to figure out what that means, how we can bring together our values around change and around social justice with the fact that we happen to have money. Many people like me who are inheritors, their family made money, their grandparents, their parents did something that allowed them to be part of this elite group in this country that controls most of the wealth. But we, you know, the young people, like, sort of found ourselves born into these families and wanting to figure out, you know, and oftentimes there's sort of guilt and contradicting emotions that go along with that, with having wealth and seeing a system in which most people live in poverty, most people are struggling, and yet a very small percentage are benefiting. And so, you know, as we grapple with that and with the challenges of that, and as we get involved in philanthropy and give away money to social justice organizations and to grassroots groups that are fighting for change, we also are trying to engage ourselves as people who have wealth.
In addition to holding the signs indicating that the 1% stands with the 99%, the Resource Generation, yourself, have helped to support these occupations.
Yeah, a lot of people have been really involved, whether it's just donating tents and food or actually coming down and participating in marches, and people have given money, people have done different things throughout the country. There's a whole network of people involved in Resource Generation who are also trying to tie into the Occupy encampments, and you know, because we're really inspired by what's going on, and we see a role that we can play, and we see it, you know, as much as, I mean, I think the movement is doing a pretty good job of making stuff happen without a lot of money. So it's not like people want to step in and sort of corrupt things by all of a sudden introducing that dynamic. But I think where it's possible, whether it's just like stuff, tents, structures, generators, whatever, we're trying to help out in what ways we can.
In your message that you held up, you said people like me should be taxed more, I'm not quoting, and people like my son should have health care. Talk about your son. Talk about Lucas Camillo.
So my son Lucas, he's 2 years old. He was born with a neuromuscular disease, so he has a lot of stuff going on. He has a tracheostomy and basically needs like someone around, a nurse or someone like myself or my partner around, who can handle his health issues at all times, because of breathing problems and what could result for that. So he's complicated and he has a lot of health needs, and we recognize that if we didn't have health insurance, we would be in big trouble. He would be in big trouble because we just couldn't, you know, all of his needs couldn't be covered sort of out of pocket. Even for someone like me who's inherited money, that would run out pretty quick. And so it really like raised our eyebrows to the fact that our healthcare system is so broken, especially for people with disabilities, especially for people with special needs, for older people. You know, there's just a lot of problems with our healthcare system. And I think if we had a different system where everyone was guaranteed healthcare, then we wouldn't have those problems and we wouldn't have to sort of worry about trying to scrap, you know, together, you know, primary insurance, secondary insurance, paying for stuff out of pocket, all the complicated issues. So for me, it's just, you know, I feel like I want to give away money. I don't necessarily, you know, want to continue being part of the 1% in the sense that I'm committed to philanthropy and sort of getting rid of the money that I've inherited in that sense. But I think I would be even more committed to that if it weren't for the fact that I have to deal with sort of disability and my son's issues on a day-to-day basis. And if we had a universal healthcare system, then that would be one element that would help contribute to his health and allow me to be more engaged in other ways.
What are your thoughts as conversations like this one? And yesterday there was a Occupy DC union committee being formed and talking about, from the postal workers who are under attack to other union jobs. You're hearing conversations, amazing conversations taking place, and yet just down the road you have the super committee doing its job. And what's being on the chopping block are programs of social uplift that are in jeopardy. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's atrocious. It looks like the super committee, you know, they're probably not going to come up with a plan. Maybe if they did, it would be worse than if they didn't, you know. But the situation is that what they're talking about are cuts primarily. Despite everything that's going on, and despite the fact that the public clearly is sort of behind this movement and behind the idea of taxing wealthy people, taxing wealthy people more, what Congress is talking about is cuts. Cuts to Social Security, cuts to Medicare, cuts to Medicaid, cuts to the programs that poor people especially need access to in order to survive. And that's just mind-boggling. It's appalling. And especially when there are other things we could do. There are plenty of ways that we could increase taxes. You know, taxes on the wealthy are at a historic low, and we could make capital gains tax be like income tax and be sort of a graduated tax, so that people like me, who actually have mostly inherited wealth or mostly invested wealth, would be taxed at a higher rate. Right now, the sort of tax rate for somebody who has most of their money, who gets most of their income through investments, is much lower than someone who's actually working for their money. That's wrong. So we should increase capital gains taxes. We should also increase the estate tax so that people who die with huge fortunes should pay a much higher rate. That's money that could be in our budget. We should have a transaction tax so that every time these high volume trades happen on Wall Street, that's being taxed, and that would also create. So there's tons of ways that we could create revenue if Congress had the nerve, had the guts to do that. But of course, it's all about money, and clearly a lot of the interests in this country, from banks to corporations to rich people, don't want that to happen, and they've got a lot of influence in Congress, and that's why we have a discussion about a revenue or about a budget crisis instead of what it really is, which is a revenue crisis. We need to come up with ways to generate more revenue.
As you're saying the words about the financial transaction tax, I was looking over at the tent for the nurses' tent, which is done by staff by National Nurses United, who have been at the forefront of calling for that tax, despite the fact that it does not directly necessarily benefit their members. But they say, you know, they see the broken bodies that result from, you know, this country having a revenue problem.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, the National Nurses Union led a protest a couple weeks ago around the transaction tax, or what some people call the Robin Hood tax. And it was, you know, it was a cold, windy, rainy day, but a couple hundred people still came out and marched to Bank of America and to the U.S. Treasury. It's great to see them and others participating in this, and I think that issue, I mean, it's one way, and I think it's a really concrete way that we could tax financial investments and stocks and bonds, and basically, you know, the people who hold those investments are the rich people. They're the 1% primarily, or at least who hold sort of large volumes of stocks and mutual funds and other kinds of financial tools. So, you know, that transaction tax, that Robin Hood tax, is one very concrete way that we could increase revenue, and that it would then go towards people who really need those programs.
Let's not talk of revenue for a sec. Let's talk expenses. And as the former executive director of CISPIS Coalition in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador, you're familiar with U.S. foreign policy. And yet military spending is not talked about when we talk about making cuts.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the question that comes up when we talk about generating more revenue. As a lot of people say, a lot of people on our side, on the progressive end, say, well, if that's all going to the war anyway, if that's all going to the Defense Department and these wars, then what good is generating more tax revenue if we don't have a choice? And it's a tough one, because it's true, and we need to change that situation as well. We definitely need to change the situation where the majority of government funding, or a huge portion of it, is going to wars and defense and Pentagon. But, you know, I guess, and yeah, I mean, so we need to have a way for people to have more of a say in that budgeting process, for us to be able to say, all right, if I'm a taxpayer, then and we as taxpayers collectively, we should be able to say where we want our tax money to go, and we don't want it to go to wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places in the world. But I think still it does come back in some ways to that revenue discussion and to taxes, because we can't even have that debate, we can't even have that fight over how the money's gonna be allocated if the money's not there. So we do need to ensure through this discussion. You know, it wouldn't be enough for me to see the Pentagon budget and Defense Department budget be slashed if we're also going to slash Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. That's not going to do it. Like, we have to generate more revenue so we can pay for those programs, and at the same time figure out a way to stop spending so much money on wars.
Another issue that you spend an awful lot of time on, having worked with the Center for Community Change and done the We Are America, helped produce the We Are America project, where immigrants tell their own stories in their own words, is immigration and the so-called secure communities. That quite isn't factored into this. At least I haven't seen it as part of this movement in a robust way quite yet, but I wanted to give you a chance to sound off on that for a minute.
Well, there have been a couple of teach-ins down here. Actually, CISPIS was part of putting together a discussion about immigrant rights and how it kind of fits into the conversations around economic justice that we're having here at Occupy DC. And I think it's very intimately connected. And some people are pushing that conversation to be happening more. But, you know, with the economy struggling, I think a lot of people want to put the blame on immigrants and say that, you know, it's these people coming in from outside who aren't citizens that are taking away jobs, and that's why we have, economic problems. And clearly this movement and what's going on here is shifting that discourse too. It's about shifting that discourse, because it's not about immigrants taking jobs. It's about, you know, banks getting bailed out and that costing our government tons of money, and then those banks not actually putting that money back into the economy. And so we have a real high unemployment rate right now, and we have, you know, it's we there's just so many problems with our economy and the way that it's set up and with this economic system. And it's not to try to scapegoat immigrants, as the Tea Party and the right wing tries to do, is not only wrong, it's just totally absurd. And so I think we're trying to, I think people here should be talking more about reframing that debate and saying, actually, immigrant workers, you know, whether it's farm workers or folks who are working, you know, in as dishwashers, you know, working these really difficult jobs, are a key part of our economy. And they're also part of this struggle. They're also part of the 99%. And we need to all work together to come up with solutions.
You mentioned the Tea Party. Some people, I don't know if it's died down a bit, were saying, well, the Occupy movement is to the left what the Tea Party is to the right. What do you make of that?
Well, I think, I mean, it's kind of it's a false, I mean, people like to come up with these little, you know, things like that to try to draw parallels. I think it's kind of a false parallel myself. I mean, there's just so much that's different in terms of, you know, we were talking about funding earlier. I mean, the Tea Party movement from the beginning has been bankrolled by the Koch brothers and by, you know, FreedomWorks, you know, by these big organizations. So it's not really grassroots in the way that this thing is, which has been much more organic and you know, has involved a lot of different people taking up leadership. But it's also, you know, there's so much about the Tea Party that is about hate and scapegoating and sort of blaming, and there's so many lies that are tied up with it about, you know, socialists, you know, Obama being a socialist, just like absurdities that are involved in that, whereas I think there's, in my opinion, a lot more truth coming out of people who are down here and who are telling their honest stories and trying to get them out there and trying to push the envelope about what needs to happen, what needs to change. And so, I mean, it's a totally different thing. And I think to try to say that this is the Tea Party of the left is just not really helpful at all.
Any final thoughts you care to share, Burke Stansberry, as we sit here at Occupy DC in McPherson Square on K Street? You a member of the 1%, but part of the We Are the 99% movement.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's got to come from everyone, and I hope people, I appreciate people understanding. I mean, you know, like standing up with my 1% sign, for the most part, you know, people have been supportive of that, even though the 1% of the sort of the people that are being targeted by this movement, and rightfully so. I think it's important to show that there are folks who have wealth for whatever reason and who are standing on the side and who recognize the need for change, and we can all work together to make this happen. I'm really inspired by the folks that have been down here and have been at Occupy sites across the country, hundreds of different places, holding it down, creating a space for movement to happen, for protest actions to happen every day. You know, this is where it's at, and I'm hoping it'll turn into something even bigger and that we can really bring about the change that we want to see.
Thanks so much, Burke Stansberry, and thanks to folks watching at OccupyDC.org and to the tech team making this happen. This interview will be posted at thefightback.org. Thanks.